भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Krishna. So, I'll read the, we're starting chapter 14 over here. So, I'll read the chapter summary and then we'll read one, first the second verses and recite, I think, the third verse. So, in this chapter, Krishna explains, this chapter entitled Lord Krishna Explains the Yoga System to Sri Uddhava. In this chapter, Krishna explains that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the most excellent method of spiritual practice. He also speaks about the process of meditation. Sri Uddhava wanted to know which process of spiritual advancement is the best. He also desired to hear about the super excellence of devotional service free from ulterior motives. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied to him that the original process of religion revealed in the Vedas had become lost during the time of annihilation. At the beginning of the new creation, therefore, the Supreme Lord spoke it again to Brahma. Brahma repeated it to Manu. Manu spoke it to the sages headed by Bhrigumani. And these sages in turn instructed this eternal religion to the demigods and demons. Because of the living entity's multitude of diverse desires, this system of religion was elaborately explained in different ways. Thus, different philosophies arose, including various atheistic doctrines. Because the living entity, bewildered by illusion, is incapable of ascertaining his eternal benefit, he mistakenly identifies ordinary vows of penance, austerity, etc. to be the topmost spiritual practice. But the only true means of achieving happiness is to meditate on offering everything to the Supreme Lord. In this way, one becomes free from all desires for selfish gratification through enjoyment of mundane sense objects, and he becomes released from all hankerings for either enjoyment or liberation. The Lord then proceeded to describe the superior process of devotional service, which destroys countless sinful reactions and produces many symptoms of spiritual happiness, such as the standing of the hairs on end. Pure devotion, having the power to purify the heart, enables one to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because the devotee is very dear to the Lord and is always close to him, he is able to purify the entire universe. By virtue of his unflinching devotion to the Lord, the devotee can never be completely diverted by the objects of sense enjoyment, even if he is not able to gain control over his senses in the beginning. One desiring to attain the perfection of his life is advised to give up all material processes of elevation as well as the association of women. He should then merge his mind constantly in thought of Lord Krishna. Finally, the Lord instructed Sri Uddhava about the true object of meditation. So, text 1. Sri Uddhava vacha vadanti Krishna shreyamsi bahuni brahmavadinaha तेषां विकल्प प्राधान्यं उताहो एको मुख्यया। Sri Uddhava said, my dear Krishna, the learned sages who explain the Vedic literature recommend various processes for perfecting one's life. Considering these varieties of viewpoints, my Lord, please tell whether all these processes are equally important or whether one of them is supreme. Purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada, in order to clearly establish the exalted position of Bhakti Yoga, or pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Sri Uddhava requests Lord Krishna to identify the Supreme among all processes of self-realization. Not all Vedic processes lead directly to the ultimate goal of life, pure love of God. Some only gradually elevate the consciousness of the living entity. For the purpose of giving a general outline of the process of self-realization, sages may discuss the various methods of elevation, but when the time comes to ascertain the most perfect process, the secondary methods must be cleared from the path. So, do I read all the three purports? I was told to take three verses today. So, okay, I'll just read the translations for the next two. My dear Lord, second one. My dear Lord, you have clearly explained the process of unalloyed devotional service by which a devotee removes all material association from his life, enabling him to fix his mind on you. So, you'll recite this verse now. Text three. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. कालेन नष्टा प्रलये वाणीं वेद संहिता वेद संहिता मयादौ ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता धर्मो यस्यान्मदात्मकः मदात्मकः श्री भगवान उवाच कालेन नष्टा प्रलये तेन नष्टा प्रलये वाणीयं वेद संहिताम् वाणीयं वेद संहिताम् मयादौ ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता आदौ ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता धर्मो यस्यां मदात्मकः यस्यां मदात्मकः श्री भगवान उवाच उवाच कालेन नष्टा प्रलये कालेन नष्टा प्रलये वाणीयं वेद संहिता वाणीयं वेद संहिता मयादौ ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता धर्मो यस्यां मदात्मकः यस्यां मदात्मकः श्री भगवान उवाच कालेन नष्टा प्रलये वाणीयां वेद संहिताम् ब्रह्मणे प्रोक्ता धर्मो यस्यां मदात्मकः श्रीभगवान् उवाच कालेन नष्टप्रलये वाणीयां वेद संहिताम् धर्मोऽयमदात्मकः forward translation Shri Bhagavan Vacha
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said
Kalena
by the influence of time
Pralaye sorry Nashta lost Pralaye At the time of annihilation, Vani, message, Iyam, this, Ved Sangita, consisting of the Vedas, Maya, by me, Alau, at the time of creation, ब्रह्मणे
अन्टु
लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा प्रोक्ता स्पोकन धर्मः रिलिजियस प्रिंसिपल्स यस्याम इन विच मद आत्मकः आइडेंटिकल विथ मी. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Purport: Lord Krishna explains to Uddhava that although many processes and concepts of spiritual realization are described in the Vedas ultimately recommend devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and his devotees directly enter into the Lord's Ladini or pleasure-giving potency. Somehow or other, one must fix one's mind in Lord Krishna, and that is not possible without devotional service. One who has not developed his attraction to Lord Krishna cannot restrain the senses from inferior engagements. Since other Vedic processes do not actually award Lord Krishna to the practitioner, they cannot offer the highest benefit in life. The transcendental sound of the Vedas is itself the highest evidence. But one whose senses and mind are entangled in sense gratification and mental speculation, and whose heart is therefore covered by material lust, cannot directly receive the transcendental Vedic message. Thus, one cannot appreciate the exalted position of devotional service to the Lord. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. हरे कृष्णा. Seek the blessings of all the senior devotees. I can speak something here, the Srimad Bhagavatam today. And here, Krishna is speaking something very similar to what he has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, the start of the fourth chapter. There also he traces the ancient nature of this knowledge, in fact, the timeless nature of this knowledge. And he says then, सकालेने महमहता योगो नष्टः परंतपा. सो कालेन एंड नष्टा, द सेम टू वर्ड्स आर यूज्ड हियर आल्सो. कालेन नष्टा प्रलये. सो बाय द पावर ऑफ टाइम द स्पिरिचुअल नॉलेज वाज लॉस्ट. एंड कृष्णा सेज दैट आई एम गिविंग इट नाउ टू यू अर्जुन. सो ऑफ कोर्स द कॉन्टेक्स्ट व्हेन ही स्पीकिंग टू उद्धव एंड द कॉन्टेक्स्ट व्हेन ही स्पीकिंग टू अर्जुन आर क्वाइट डिफरेंट. In here, Krishna has described the various processes of yoga, and he has of course described the primacy of bhakti. So Uddhava wants to have a categorical emphasis on that, and he asks, are all these yoga processes important, and or is one particular process most important? And instead of directly answering the question, Krishna, he focuses on giving the background by which that answer will naturally emerge. So, if we say bhakti yoga is the best way, why? You are followers of bhakti, that's why you think bhakti is, you claim bhakti is the best. Now, Krishna is going to describe here how
He himself gave this knowledge and how the various processes emerged. And then from that analysis, the paramountcy, the supremacy of bhakti will emerge. In the Bhagavad Gita, prior to when Krishna says, Kale ne mahata, there he is talking about, in the 3.36 to 43, he is talking about how selfish desire, kama, deludes all living beings. And how we need buddhi. We need intelligence to raise ourselves to the spiritual platform. Evam buddhe param buddhva samsthabhyatmanam atmana yahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. So in 3.43, Krishna tells Arjuna that with intelligence, situate yourself on the spiritual platform. And naturally the question will come, where does this intelligence come from? It comes from knowledge. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada explains in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavata purport that knowledge means to see things as they are, and intelligence means to see things in proper perspective. So, to see a thing as it is, that is knowledge, but intelligence means to see thing in interrelation with other things. And this difference is seen again in the Bhagavad Gita in 18.20 to 22, Krishna talks about knowledge in the three modes. And 18.30 to 32, he talks about intelligence in the three modes. So, knowledge basically refers to the jnanendriyas, how we take the world in. So, intelligence refers to how we interact with the world. So, we have two modes of interaction with the world. We, through the jnanendriyas, we take in knowledge. Through the knowledge acquiring senses, we take in information. Through the karmendriyas, through the action applying executing senses, we act. So, intelligence, if we see what Krishna talks about in 18.30 to 32, he's talking about how we act in the world. So, how we perceive and how we act are related, of course. But there's a different thrust. So, essentially Krishna says that, okay, if you have to act with sense control, for that you need knowledge. And that knowledge, Krishna says, I have provided long ago. I provided it to the sun god. Saivayam mayatedya yoga prokta puratana. That which I had given to the sun god, which was lost, now I'll speak to you because you are my devotee. So the purpose of the Lord in giving spiritual knowledge is to free us from illusion and to elevate us towards the supreme liberation. And here also, Krishna, he gives the antecedents. There Krishna is talking about how within the course of one creation of Brahma itself, the knowledge has got lost. Here Krishna is talking about after one creation gets over and when the next creation begins. Then in the intermediate period also the knowledge is lost. And he gives the knowledge back. So that's why pralaya, it's lost at pralaya, at destruction, but then it comes back again. So broadly, this purpose of spiritual knowledge is to guide us in our living. If somebody sends us a gift, and it's a very complicated machine that has come. It has the battery, it has the power cord, it has everything for its maintenance and its operation. But there is no manual. Then we may wonder, you know, who sent this gift? If a person would be careful enough, cautious enough to send us a gift, it's reasonable to consider that they may also send what the machine is to be meant for. So, if we look at the world around us, it is immensely complicated. And whatever we need for living is provided here. We see that we need food, we need water, we need air, we need light. And all these things are there in nature already. And Prabhupada explains in a purport that there are different living beings and they all have different food items that they eat. And all the living beings, whatever food items they need, they are provided for in nature. So this is an amazing arrangement. How has this come about? Some scientists say that it's actually, like you call it something called anthropic principle. They say, you know, if it had not been there, then those living beings would not be alive. So therefore, only because the living beings are alive, we are asking this question, how is it there? But that's simply an observation of consequence. That's not an explanation of cause. Yeah, if the food would not be there, the living would not be alive. But still the question remains, where did the food come from? So where did the arrangements come from? So basically the point I'm making is that the needs for living are provided for. So then would just like a manual with just like a device with its power cords and batteries provided given, then would not the manual for living be provided? If the needs for living are provided, would not the knowledge for why to live be provided? That knowledge is the revelation coming from the Lord. So that's why here Krishna is saying that when the creation comes, at that time manifests this knowledge. This is co-eternal with creation. So actually it is eternal, but whenever creation manifests, at that time this knowledge becomes manifest to guide living beings through their journey in life. Now, the Bhagavatam also explains that in the beginning, everybody was in the mode of goodness. And that's why they could understand the knowledge straightforward. But as people's modes became more complex, there's a combination of lower and higher modes, then, because not all people are at the same level, the same path was not equally appealing. So therefore, the same path was diversified. And thus, for people who are at different levels of consciousness, different paths were recommended so that they can at least make gradual elevation. However, what was meant to act in cooperation eventually started acting in competition. That means that there are various processes and they are meant to cooperatively help the soul to rise from one level of consciousness to another, to another, to another. But the nature of the human mind is that it wants to believe that whatever I am doing is the best. So proponents of different paths, they started claiming that their path was not just one progression in the ladder of Vedic elevation. Rather, it was itself the supreme. In the Vedanta Sutra, there are sections where the author, Badarayana Vyasa, he actually refutes Sankhya, he refutes Yoga, he refutes Mimamsa. Now, Baldev Vidya Bhushan, in his Govinda Bhashya commentary, analyzes there that Yoga is actually a path given by the Supreme Lord. So, Yoga is a part of our tradition, Sankhya, Ashtanga, Sankhya, or the six systems of philosophy, they are all parts of our tradition. So why is it that they are being refuted over here? So he says that by the Supreme Lord's arrangement, even the great sages sometimes get deluded. And therefore, instead of proclaiming the supremacy of bhakti, they proclaim that their own paths are supreme. And we respect the greatness of those sages, but we don't accept these particular teachings of theirs. And then he goes on further and he also refutes Yoga. He also refutes Sankhya. He also refutes Mimamsa. Now when we say he refutes, that doesn't mean he proves that they are false. Sankhya is a frame of analysis. Yoga is a frame of looking at the world. They're valid. But what is refuted is the idea that they are the path. They are the best path to the highest destination. In life, we all need two things, sadhana and sadhya. Sadhana is the means and sadhya is the goal. Whatever we do, if you want to travel, then, where do I want to go and how am I going to go? I want to go to Jacksonville. Should I go by car or should I ask for a ride or should I look for a bus? What should I do? So, there is sadhana and sadhya. Now, bahu shastra bahu vakya chitta brahma hai, sadhana sadhya seshta nahai nishchare. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cautions that if you just get too caught in scriptures, then there are so many scriptures with so many teachings that what is the means and what is the end? We can get bewildered about that. So, for people, say for somebody who is in the mode of ignorance, for them to rise slightly upwards, there is the Puranas which talk about worship of particular devatas. But But when the followers of those devatas started claiming that their devata is supreme, then that which was meant to be cooperative in the Vedic master plan for elevation, that instead of being cooperative, became competitive. And when this happened, that is the illusion. So, nashta, kalena nashta. So, the same knowledge which is meant for helping us rise, if it claims to be the highest, then it becomes a deviation from the path. And Krishna, after telling how these paths are meant for gradual elevation, then he will say that how? When they are thought of as independent paths to spiritual realization, they cause illusion. So he will illustrate, he will emphasize that bhakti is the highest. So broadly speaking, if we consider the human being, we have three broad faculties: the hands, the head and the heart. So when we work with the hands, primarily that is karma yoga. We are always working, but when we work with the hands, work physically for some higher purpose. So we work with detachment. So when we work with the hands, that is karma yoga primarily. When we work with the head, that is jnana yoga. We analyze, this is not this, this is not this. See, basically analysis means that we observe reality, whatever is there we observe, and then we filter reality. Analysis means we observe, we process, and we filter. Okay, this is not important for me, this is not important for me, this is not important for me. And this is what I want to focus on. So, when doctors analyze symptoms, okay, this symptom is present, but this symptom is not present. So, it can't be this disease, it can't be this disease, it can't be this disease. So, that way, by analysis, they reject options. And then they come to conclusion, okay, this is your disease, this is the disease. That's how, actually, when doctors diagnose the disease, it's a process of inference through rejection, primarily. And now, that's the process of jnanis, naiti. This is not the reality, this is not the reality, this is not the reality. Then what is the supreme reality? So by negation of the material, they try to achieve the transcendental. Now the innermost faculty for us, the driving faculty, is the heart. And the heart longs for love. The path of the heart is bhakti yoga. Now bhakti yoga is not just the path of the heart. Actually, bhakti yoga is the path of the heart which uses the head and the hands. Where the heart is, that's where our head will go, that's where our hands will go. Now whatever we are devoted to, that's what we will use all our faculties for. So the deepest core of our being is our heart. Now when we talk about heart, we're not talking about emotions which come and go. A specific emotions we sometimes feel and they are infatuations. Sometimes specific aversions we may feel. But beyond the specific emotions we feel is our emotionality. Not emotionality in the sense of being very emotional, sentimental. Emotionality in the sense of our faculty to feel, our faculty to experience emotions, which comes from our consciousness. So bhakti yoga is the path of the heart. It actually goes to our innermost core. And from that, addressing the power of our innermost core, our power to desire, our power to love, it directs us to the highest reality. So, Jiva Goswami in Sandarbhas describes that there are different manifestations of the Absolute. So, there is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, he says Brahman manifestation means that we perceive of the Absolute Truth without any attributes. Neither material attributes nor spiritual attributes. We see simply as existence. So for example, say now I am looking at you, you are looking at me. So now when we are looking at each other, there are three things involved. Say if you are looking at me, you are the subject of consciousness. I am the object of consciousness. And in between is the stream of consciousness that connects us to. So whenever perception happens, there is the object of consciousness which is seen, there is the subject of consciousness which is the seer. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur writes an essay about this principle of the seer and the seen. So now, the point is that the impersonalists hold that both the object and the subject of consciousness are illusion. they say only the stream of consciousness exists. So neither you exist nor I exist, only the stream of consciousness exists. And Krishna, right in the start of the Bhagavad Gita, he actually counters this notion. The first verse that he speaks is a counter of monism. He said, Natve vaham jatu nasam, natvam nene janadhipana chaivana bhavishyama, sarve vayamataha param. He says, neither you nor I nor any of these kings will ever cease to exist. So personality is an irreducible reality as Krishna describes it. But the point I'm making is that Jiva Goswami considers Brahman to be the only reality. Or Jiva Goswami says that the impersonalists consider Brahman to be the only reality, and so they conceive of the absolute without any potencies. There's no potency at all. So beyond that, these are the jnanis, and there are the yogis. So yogis basically integrate the head and the hands, and they try to reach towards the heart. They perform physical austerity, the head, and they try to analyze, meditate, and try to find out who is there in the heart. So they're a little higher than the karmis and the jnanis, but they're not yet at the level of bhakti. So what the yogis do is, they perceive the Supreme Lord with material potencies. That means there is a Supreme Being who controls this world. So the Supreme Being has potencies, but only material potencies. The bhaktas perceive the Supreme Lord with material and spiritual potencies. Yes, he is controlling this world, but that is not the only thing that he is doing. He has his own self-existence where he has a delightful life of love. If the Supreme Lord were simply a judge who is rewarding the pious and punishing the impious, actually, to be God would be very boring. You know, being a judge is not a very enjoyable profession. So if God, all he had to do was to be a judge for the rest of eternity, a human judge would be better because he gets a break. A divine judge gets no break. So yes, there is a manifestation of God who does that, but that is not God's original self-existence. So the bhaktas understand that controlling the world is not the primary function of God. He has his own self-existence where he delights in eternal pastimes of love. So the bhaktas conceive of the absolute as having both material potencies, in the sense that he is not material, but the material world is his potency. He controls the material world also through his potencies. And he also has spiritual potencies. The material potency, we can say, is the three modes of material nature: sattva guna, rajoguna, tamoguna. Sometimes Prabhupada uses the word three modes of spiritual nature to refer to samvit, sandini, and ladini shaktis. So this is the complete understanding of the absolute truth. So I said, till now what I talked about is that if you want to go on a journey, we need to know the sadhya and sadhan. Where do I want to go and how do I want to go it? So then I explained how bhakti is the best sadhan, because it addresses our core, not just the hands or the head, but the heart. And Krishna is the supreme sadhya, because he is the absolute with both material and spiritual potencies. Now, depending on people's conceptions, their relative emphasis, their relative understanding of the absolute truth, they may perceive the absolute truth differently, and then they may perceive that conception. So that's a path for limited elevation for them. So jnanis also get elevated by their path. Yogis also get elevated by their path. But it's a limited elevation. It doesn't lead to complete perfection. So when a path that leads to partial elevation is claimed to be the supreme, that is where the misdirection happens. That is how the knowledge gets lost. Kalena nashta. And this is something which keeps happening. It's interesting that Krishna, in the same Bhagavad Gita where he says, by the power of time, the spiritual knowledge is lost, Krishna also says, Kalosmi lokakshekutraut. Time I am. So, he is the giver of spiritual knowledge when he comes himself or he sends his representatives. And through the power of time, it is he who also causes that knowledge to go away. Now, it is not he who is causing it.
There are primary causes, there are secondary causes, and there are tertiary causes. So, when the sun is giving light, but somewhere there is a shadow, because the sun is the ultimate cause, but the sun is not causing the shadow. It's somebody who is turned away from the sun and is standing, that person causes a shadow. So like that, it is people who get deviated, people who misunderstand and misapply. I talked about Jnanendriya and Karmendriya, about knowledge and intelligence. So people who either misunderstand the truth or misapply the truth, either of them, they cause the deviation to happen. They cause that knowledge to get off track. Now, Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that when he gave this knowledge, it should be preserved as it is. Because he knew that the nature of material nature is to cause deterioration of things. Now, it's interesting that when Srila Prabhupada said, I kept this knowledge as it is, I gave what my spiritual master taught me as it is. Now, if we look at Srila Prabhupada's teaching style and Srila Prabhupada's writing style, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur's writing style, a significant amount of difference. Many of the magazines that Prabhupada wrote, the early BTG magazine 1944, before that, at that time when he wrote the magazines, he uses quite high English. But in most of his books, he used simple English. Because that is a mode of presentation. The essential message was the same, but what was required for the audience, Prabhupada did that accordingly. So keeping things as it is means essentially that the effect is as it is. Sometimes people ask, okay, there are so many, so through so many people this message has gone. So there's a tradition. How do you know that throughout the tradition the message has been transmitted as it is? What is the proof of that? Yes, now we can try to do a historical analysis to try to check, okay, this person, this acharya is connected to this acharya is connected to this acharya. And we can try to explain that. But the more important thing is, if we consider spiritual knowledge to be like a curative medicine, then what we can see is that, okay, if this medicine was given to person A, and a person A had severe fever, and the fever went off. And then from A it was passed on to B, to C, to D, to D, E, and like that it has come to Z. Now, how do we know that somebody has not slipped in the counterfeit medicine in between? If we want to go and check all the people, check their pockets, check what they do, maybe have a video to see what all, how, whether they are passing it properly or not. It's a very messy process. But if Z takes the medicine and Z gets cured the same way as A was cured, then we understand that it has been passed on. So the essence of whether the message is being transmitted or not, whether the medicine has been transmitted or not, is phalena parichayate. If the desired result is coming out or not, if the desired result is coming, then the medicine is as it is. Similarly, when we say that Bhagavad Gita is as it is, Prabhupada says it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. So how do we know that? We look at what happened to Arjuna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, we can see there are two ways. What is Arjuna's understanding and what is Arjuna's action? Okay, knowledge and intelligence. So Arjuna's understanding, he tells at the end of the Chatushloki Gita. He says that, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adidevam Ajam Vibhum. So he says, you are the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna understands that Krishna is the Sadhya. That is 10.12.13. And then at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, okay, in 18.73, Krishna says that, Arjuna says, Karishye vachanam tava, I will do your will. Now, Arjuna is not saying I will fight. Fighting is one specific activity. Arjuna's understanding is, I am a devotee of Krishna, I want to practice bhakti. And bhakti means harmonizing human will with divine will. So Arjuna understands that the sadhya is Krishna and the sadhana is bhakti. Now we can see Srila Prabhupada traveled all over the world, taught millions of people, and what was their understanding? They had various different conceptions of sadhya and sadhana, but they gave it all up and they accepted Krishna as the supreme sadhya and bhakti as the supreme sadhana. And this way, we gave the same effect, like the first person A was cured and person Z was cured.
So same result that was there in Arjuna, we see that by Srila Prabhupada when he taught the Bhagavad Gita. And similarly now, when we have the responsibility of sharing Srila Prabhupada's message, we have to see whether the result is coming out. The specific process, how exactly that result is brought about, that may vary. Prabhupada writes, speaks in one lecture that I practically invented this Krishna consciousness movement. On one level he says, I just give everything as it is. On the other he says, I practically invented. Invented means, Prabhupada explains, he takes this in the Nectar of Devotion lecture, he says that, actually, he says, Rupa Goswami says, Yena kena prakarana mana Krishna niveshi. Somehow or the other, fix the mind on Krishna. And he says, Prabhupada says, it is the spiritual master's responsibility to invent ways and means to help the disciple fix the mind on Krishna. So what Prabhupada invented is not the sadhya, he did not invent Krishna. He did not invent bhakti. That is what is given in scripture. But how exactly people can practice bhakti today? How exactly they can fix their mind on Krishna? That is something which Srila Prabhupada was very creative. So book distribution was a way in which he channeled the passionate energy. Rath Yatra was a brilliant idea. The hippies like to dance on streets. They like to do outrageous things. And what could be more outrageous than dancing on streets? If you dance on streets, you'll get in trouble with the police. But here Prabhupada developed Rath Yatra and they danced on the streets and the police were escorting them. So Prabhupada took an ancient festival which was there in Jagannath Puri and Prabhupada adapted it. The adaptation was that instead of having it on the same day as it was in Puri, Prabhupada had it at different days depending on what was accessible for people. So the principle remained the same, but the way it was executed changed. So deviation can happen in two ways. Basically, there is a tradition and there is a situation, you could say, contemporary situation. So the spiritual message has to be connected with the tradition and has to be connected with the contemporary situation. If it is not connected with the tradition, then there is no potency. If it is not connected with the situation, it has no relevance. So both are required. If Srila Prabhupada, the Vedic scriptures in Sanskrit. If Prabhupada had come to America and spoken in Sanskrit, he may speak in perfect Sanskrit. There is perfect connection with the tradition, but there is no connection with the audience. And there is no effect. So, presenting the message effectively means that there has to be both the connection with the tradition and a connection with the audience. So, if in trying to connect with the audience, you just bend too much backwards, we adapt too many things, then there's a disconnection with the tradition. And then that's where, if there is excessive flexibility, we just start changing core things. You needn't worship Krishna. You can worship this God, you can worship that God, that's also okay. That God is supreme. We can't say that. So if there is too much adaptation to the situation, then the excess of flexibility comes at the cost of fidelity. Fidelity is connection with the tradition. So that way deviation can happen. But deviation can happen in another way also. If there is excess of fidelity and lack of flexibility, then we may be connected with the tradition, but we are not connected with the situation. We are not connected with the audience at all. And then also what may happen is that we may not have any effect on people. So faithfulness to the tradition also includes faithfulness to the flexibility of the tradition. The tradition itself has an aspect of flexibility. So now, what comes from the tradition is unchanging. But the situation in which we are presented, that is changing. And therefore, the mode of presentation, the appropriate way, that needs to be adapted according to time, place, circumstance. Srila Prabhupada himself was quite flexible. I'll conclude with two points that about the flexibility of Srila Prabhupada and the fidelity of Srila Prabhupada. That when Srila Prabhupada in America, most of the people here were at that time in the counterculture, who were more or less rejecting mainstream culture. So the movement that started in America was primarily a temple-based movement. People would just reject the world and come to the temple and consider the whole world to be Maya and live in the temple. And that was what becoming a devotee meant. But when Prabhupada went to India, at that time in India, most of the people were pious Hindus and they had no interest in leaving their homes and coming to the temples. When that kind of rejecting the world, rejecting everything, that kind of presentation was made, it did not hold much relevance to them. So Prabhupada created, he cast a very wide net, we could say. He created something called a life membership program, where the only thing that they do is they give some contribution and they get Prabhupada's books and they give facility to come and stay in the temple. So what is the purpose of this? At least have some connection with Krishna. And within that connection, gradually progression can take place. And now we see after many years, in the 1970s and even 1980s, our movement was not very strong in India. But now, India has become like the powerhouse of our movement. So situations change. So now thousands and thousands of people, I went to one person meet, and you know, people write their certificates, LLB, this, that, and he had put in the certificate, nameplate, ISKCON life member. So he had put, he's proud of that identification. So there's some connection with Krishna and gradually they become elevated. So Prabhupada himself he wanted the life members to become devotees, but he was satisfied, at least that connection is there. So Prabhupada, we did Harinam Sankirtan in all over the world. But when the devotees started doing Harinam Sankirtan in India, especially in Bengal, so people started throwing coins at them. Because at that time, Vaishnavism was considered a beggar's profession. So people who could not do anything, they would do kirtans and people will give them some money. So then Prabhupada told them, don't do kirtans over here. Not permanently, but we don't want to be lumped with these people. So Prabhupada was sensitive to the audience and accordingly he presented. So similarly for us, we need to make sure that there is a connection with the tradition and a connection with the contemporary situation. There is fidelity which connects us with the tradition, there is flexibility which connects us with the audience. If either is missing, then both ways deviation can happen. We can bend too much towards the situation or we can bend too much towards the tradition and become disconnected from the situation. If we bend too much towards the contemporary situation, then we just become a part of the contemporary landscape. There's nothing about the tradition left. If we bend too much towards the tradition, then the tradition becomes a museum exhibit. There's nobody practicing it. It's not relevant to people. But what the tradition essentially is, it's not meant to be a museum. It's not meant to be a fossil. It is meant to be a garden where souls are to be cultivated. Souls are to be harvested. And depending on what the atmospheric condition is, the same seed is brought, but sometimes different kinds of water are required. Sometimes different kinds of manure is required. But the purpose is, let the seed blossom. So, by having this as it is means, the phala should come as it is. The people should understand that Krishna is God and bhakti is the means to him. If they understand this and pursue this, then this purpose of Krishna in giving the spiritual knowledge, in ensuring that the Vedic message, the purpose is fulfilled, that we will also be able to play our small part in carrying on this glorious legacy that Srila Prabhupada has given us. So I'll summarize quickly. I spoke today about how Vedic knowledge originates and is disseminated. So the principle of revelation is that if somebody gives us a device, they provide a manual. So like that, the world is provided with our needs. So will God not provide us a knowledge of what is the purpose for living in this world? And that knowledge comes through the scriptures. So when people are of one level of consciousness, one knowledge is given. People and goodness, knowledge of transcendence or bhakti is given. People of different levels, then knowledge is customized to help them make limited spiritual advancement. From their level to one step up. But when these intermediate processes are considered to be ultimate, then instead of cooperation, there is competition. And then that is how deviation happens. So that has to be rejected. And then, how do we know that bhakti is the highest path? We discussed how bhakti addresses our innermost faculty. Karma addresses the hands, jnana addresses the head, bhakti addresses the heart. And how do we know bhakti for Bhagwan is the highest, that bhakti is the sadhan and Bhagwan is the sadhya? So about how the jnanis conceive of the absolute without any attribute, just consciousness without any object or subject.
So there is no material, there is no attributes at all. The yogis who have a blend of the head and the hands, they conceive of the absolute with material potencies. He is controlling this world. Whereas the bhaktas conceive of the absolute with material and spiritual potencies. He is not just a judge. He has his joyful self-existence with his personal associates and his personal potencies. And we want to attain that absolute. So how do you know that Bhagavad Gita is as it is? How do we know that a medicine is as it is? Whether the effect it had on the original patient, does it have it on the later patient? So similarly, whatever was the effect on Arjuna, is it there on the followers of Srila Prabhupada? Arjuna accepted Krishna as sadhya and bhakti as sadhana. And millions of people following Srila Prabhupada have accepted that. And as the followers of Srila Prabhupada, when we present bhakti, we also need to check whether we are having this result in people of helping them understand Krishna as sadhya and bhakti as sadhana. Prabhupada gave the message as it is, and yet he invented the Krishna consciousness movement. That means he gave the knowledge of sadhana and sadhya, but how to fix the mind on sadhya, he did many adaptations for that purpose. So we too need to be connected with the tradition, that is our fidelity, and we need to connect it with our contemporary situation, that is our flexibility. Then the message will have its effect. So if we connect too much with the situation, then there is deviation because we just become a part of the contemporary landscape. We connect only with the tradition, then we become a museum piece. But when we are connected with both, then it's like a potent medicine that cures the patient. The message goes into the hearts of people and their bhakti lata beach, their creeper of devotion blossoms. And thus the living tradition is a garden filled with fruits of love of Krishna, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to disseminate. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yes, Maharaj.
So we're the, thank you so much. Second time I've heard your class here in Alachua. It's very edifying. I'll try to be very brief. Two points that occurred to me. You emphasize that bhakti is the sadhana and Krishna is the sadhya. But we also hear that bhakti is not just the means but also the goal. In other words, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it would seem that we don't want Krishna, we want to love Krishna. We want that exchange with Krishna.
Yeah.
It's more in the mood of Srimati Radharani, like that. The first point, you can clarify. And the second one, if I could just humbly suggest, I'd rather have an authentic museum that maybe once in a while someone may venture to visit, than have something as big and popular and so relevant, but is disconnected. So I wouldn't put it like it's like 50-50. I would...
Yeah.
So sometimes Prabhupada said, we're not looking for vox populi.
Yeah.
He would say, I'm not, what's the use of so many stars? Better one moon. So I'm not saying we should be exclusive or exclude people, but at the same time, if we have to give up one thing or the other, and I hope we don't, but if we did, I'd rather give up the popularity than give up the authenticity. I mean, that's just my realization.
Yes,
so
definitely.
You can give some feedback.
So is bhakti the sadhya or is it for us a sadhana also? Yes, it is. It is because when we go to the spiritual world, there also we love Krishna. So in a sense, even Krishna is not just our sadhya. He's also a sadhana. Krishna is our destination, but he's also our companion. He's present in our hearts right now also. But we're not realizing his presence. So there is bhakti yoga as a sadhana that we do. By practicing bhakti yoga, we become purified. And when we become purified, then we love Krishna and we practice bhakti out of natural affection. So yeah, bhakti is a sadhana in the sense that right now, it is a means for raising our consciousness upwards. But yes, sadhana does not mean, it is not in the sense that, okay, after I reach the destination, I don't need this vehicle. No, there what changes is not the process, but the purpose. Or the reason, the motivating factor. Right now, we practice bhakti for our purification. But there, we'll practice bhakti simply out of love. Jiva Goswami says that sadhakas, they practice bhakti because of their buddhi. The siddhas practice bhakti because of their preeti. So in that sense, the process doesn't change. So it's not a dispensable vehicle. The vehicle is eternal. The vehicle is what we eternally use, but the purpose why we are using it changes. Yeah, and it's better to have an authentic museum than just a hodgepodge which is not connected with the tradition. Yes, that's definitely true. So we would say that the adjustments have to be very well thought out, very cautiously done, and we have to constantly see the effect. The adjustments will have to be minimal. I definitely didn't imply that 50% flexibility and 50% fidelity. That was not the point. My point was simply that flexibility is also required. For example, in some aspects, flexibility is very easy to understand. If you go to a country where, say, Spanish is spoken, then we can't speak in English over there. Somebody has to translate. So with respect to language, there has to be flexibility. Similarly, with respect to, say, food, certain foods may be more easily available there, certain foods may not be available. So there's a conversation in the book Hare Krishna Explosion between Allen Ginsberg and Srila Prabhupada. And there, Allen Ginsberg says that Krishna conscious movement will not spread because it is too sectarian. Prabhupada said, no, it's universal. So what is sectarian? So he talks about three things. He says, your language, your food, and your dress. So Prabhupada is quite liberal about it. He says, you know, language, you can chant. Prabhupada even goes to the extent, you don't even have to chant Krishna's name. You can chant names in any tradition, according to your tradition. Then he says, dress, that's not essential. It's preferable, but it's not essential. And as for food, any food you can offer to Krishna. So in the name of flexibility, we can't change the purpose. The purpose has to be the same. But certain things which put off people, they may have to be adjusted. So now here, with respect to flexibility, one dicey point comes is, in the culture, there are certain aspects which can put off some people. So then how do we deal with those aspects? We have to give the medicine, but we have to give the medicine in a way that people feel inspired to take the medicine. It's like a nurse, one time I was very sick. So I had almost like 25 blood samples had been taken from my hand. So then when the nurse came and she wanted to take a blood sample, there was practically no place to take the blood sample from. And she spent almost 10 minutes to find out a place where painlessly the pin could be inserted. The needle could be inserted. Now she could have said, I don't care. My goal is to put the pin. So, but that would have caused a lot of pain. So she was concerned about that. So now obviously the pin prick because of the injection is going to be there. But that pain can be minimized. So if I have already got some sore spots on my skin, then I have to be care. Then the needle has to be inserted more carefully. So like that, depending on the time, place, circumstance, different people have different cultural sore spots. So if certain thing, if while our presentation of bhakti, if we put the needle at a place where there is already a sore spot, the person may just, hey, it's too painful. I don't want to do this. So they may just, I don't want to take this injection. So we have to be cautious about that. So,
just one.
Yeah. So just so I'll say that we have to be. If people have sore spots, we have to. We still have to give the injection, but we have to give it in a way that doesn't alienate the people. That doesn't make them go away. So we have to give the medicine, but along with the medicine, a surgeon also gives. We often use the example: sadhu's words are meant to cut illusions. Yes, a surgery has to be done, but a surgery also is accompanied with anesthesia. So we have to create that culture of confidence as people feel that they are well-wishers. And then whatever misconceptions we want to uproot, then we can uproot them. So we have to challenge their conceptions, but we have to do it in as painless a way as possible. Thank you.
Yeah. So just very quick, the principle of going in with a needle and coming out with a plow is also there. We say amongst ourselves, we say the Sunday feast. They'll say, oh, you're going to come out with a plow. No. The point is that we can adapt and we can present things, just like you were saying, Prabhupada said to Allen Ginsberg. Well, who's Allen Ginsberg? He was quite conditioned, although he was very helpful for some time. The point is that we don't stay that way. In other words, you get them into the game. Yena kena prakarena. That doesn't mean that this adapting, maybe adapting to Western culture and like that. We're not actually changing or adapting. We're just not putting it right in their face.
Yeah.
And then we have to try to bring them. It's not more than just tradition. It's Veda. And it's Sri Guru Parampara. So I think it's our duty to not be relaxed. And especially you shouldn't internalize our adaptations. And we ourselves become very modern in too many
ways.
Very
valid point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Padma. So we'll end the class here. If there are further questions, we can have a discussion. Those of you who want to leave, you can leave. Yes.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Maharaj. It seemed like every time we go out preaching, we're adapting our situation to the person we're preaching to. We have to see where the person is at, and then we present Krishna consciousness. My question is, when we're presenting Krishna consciousness, especially if we're trying to give a book, is it because we haven't presented it properly and adjusted to the situation that the person doesn't take the book? What do you think?
Oh, okay. So, if we give a book and somebody doesn't take it, does that mean we are not presented properly? Not, it's possible, but it's not necessary. Prabhupada himself was preaching for so many years in India, and not many people took up. That is not the defect of Srila Prabhupada. He's a pure devotee. Sometimes people may just not be ready. So basically, we try to present as attractively as possible. So that they will want to take it. But then, so if people are not provided the option, then that is our problem. If people don't take the option, that is their problem. We try to present as attractively as possible, but sometimes even with the best attractive presentation, sometimes people may not take up. But that's their free will, that's their level of consciousness. And we can't ascribe all failure of preaching to the preacher itself. The preacher should always be introspective and see what can I do better. But sometimes even with the best preacher, it may be that the audience is not ready. If the audience is not ready, the effect will not be there. So that it is always a cooperative endeavor. The audience also has to be interested. Prabhupada gives a simple example for this. And he says we can push people. Sometimes if a car is not starting, in India it happens, if a car doesn't start, people come along and they push the car till the car's engine picks up and then the car moves on. Now, internally the person is trying to move the steering wheel, press the gas and move the car, and externally people are pushing. But suppose internally the person is pressing the brake, or internally the person has gone to sleep, then people will say, why should I keep pushing? Why should I keep pushing? Better let me go somewhere else and help someone else. So like that, we can push people to some extent. But in turn, they have to start the car. They also want to need to move. So our pushing will have no effect if they don't. They have no desire to move at all. That's why we can try to learn better ways of presenting the books. But we shouldn't ascribe all failure to not distribute a book to the preacher itself, to distributor itself. Does that answer your question?
Sometimes, you know, there's so many ways you can present a book sometime. You listen to them, you see where they're at, and then you say something simple. This is a book about yoga, you know, not telling them exactly and directly sometimes. And then they may take the book and then later on say, wait a second, this is not a yoga I had in mind, you know, because we didn't clarify it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the point is, should we tell them so they can take the book? Giving the book is more important. Prabhupada said, you're 2 minutes preaching, what would that do if they take the book? But then there has to be a balance where you want them to have an interest in the book and read the book.
Yeah,
and not just
that's a challenge. Okay, so sometimes we don't present a book properly. We say this book was yoga and it turns out to be not on yoga. Then they get alienated. So we have to see what is the important thing. Sometimes giving the book is important. Sometimes the overall cultural perception is important. So if more and more people start feeling that we misrepresent the book and basically take the money from them, their money from them, then that may create a negative environment. So it is best that we present the book as authentically as possible, but as appealingly as possible also. That means if there are 50 things in the book, we may present the one or two things which they can relate with. But we don't tell that those one or two things are the only things, or we don't tell the 51st thing that is not present in the book. But so if you could find the intersection between what the book contains and what interests the audience, then that is the best. But just somehow or the other trying to hand out a book, which later makes people misunderstand what we are doing, or they make us think that we are just we are not honest people, and that can create a lot of negative perception. So, and that can alienate people. In the long run, it will be counterproductive. So we have to, Krishna says, na buddhi bhedam janayet ajnanam karma sangam. Don't disturb the minds of ignorant people. So people may not appreciate the content of the book, but they will see our conduct. And if they feel that our conduct is deceptive, then they will be alienated, not just from us particularly, but in future, to explore the content of the book also, they may get alienated. So we don't want to win the battle and lose the war. We want to win the battle as a part of winning the war. So winning the war is getting the soul to Krishna. Winning the battle is giving the soul a book. So both need to work harmoniously. Thank you very much. Yes, Prabhu.
Also, kind of second to your question, very nice question, is at the same time, it's because our whole path is based on a relationship. Everything's relationship. The relationship with the book and the person that you're, if they don't take the book, but you leave them and they see like Prabhuji is saying about when they walk away, that maybe they didn't take the book this time, but because you had such a loving relationship with them, next time from somebody else, they might take a book or they might see a book in a bookstore, and then they'll think favorably. So you are preaching. Sometimes we as book distributors, sometimes we can get caught in the results. But at the same time, Krishna's so kind through Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada that you're also learning detachment from the results of if they take the book or not. It all comes back around in relationships. Isn't that amazing? It's just brilliant, brilliant technology Srila Prabhupada has given us.
Yes, last.
Point that Guru Prasad Swami, Guru Prasad Mehta was asking about. when I was just joined the New York Sankirtan department, I think it was early 78, Pragosh Prabhu was one of the biggest distributors. And he would speak about every night before he would take rest, he would review all of the major transactions that he had with people that he was trying to distribute books to, and think of ways that he could have handled it differently so that the results would have been more effective. So that kind of meditation also like seems to be a pretty big element, as the Prabhupada did, you know, he's constantly meditating on how to spread Krishna consciousness. And the definition Prabhupada gives in text 5 purport of Nectar of Instruction of the Uttamadhikaris, he's always meditating on ways to spread Krishna consciousness. So that's, you know, when one has that type of intensity and focus, then Krishna seems to give the intelligence. It seems to be a big part of the formula. One question that I had for you, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes.
This may be a little awkward, and you'll have to answer it if you don't want. But what I was thinking, you know, when you gave the class, you're spending more time in America, you're making observations, you're coming from the powerhouse of India, the powerhouse of Chopadi. And I'm wondering if you have some realizations or thoughts of how Krishna consciousness could be, spreading of Krishna consciousness in America could be substantially strengthened.
How can Krishna consciousness be spread in America? Actually, I'm learning that. So I would say that those devotees who are here, probably I learn more from them.
Yeah.
But what I have observed is that from coming from India, and that true from temples which are quite, I was from Pune, which is much more conservative than Chaupati also. It was in Chaupati for some time. So what I've seen is that here there are many devotees who may be externally, culturally, in very different ways from what I have been habituated in India. And still they are as devoted to Krishna as many of the devotees in India. So for me, firstly, this whole conception of Krishna Bhakti, as my conception of Krishna Bhakti has expanded just by interacting with devotees here. And then I see outreach happening, what When my spiritual master told me about 10-12 years ago to start learning to write for a Western audience, I started looking at how other religious teachers, other spiritual teachers present themselves. So the main thing I noticed is that in the West, people are interested in spiritual individuals. They are not interested in the religious organizations, because they have had so much bad experiences with religious organizations. So if we come off as an organized religion, then that itself is a stopper for them. So how exactly we can, actually, although we are a religious organization, we are also filled with very spiritual individuals. Not just because saying in a self-congratulatory sense, but we have many devotees who are very spiritually advanced, and we also have many devotees who are serious spiritual seekers. So in terms of the spiritual frame of consciousness, we do have a lot of people who are capable of attracting a lot of people. But once the perception of organized religion comes in, people just their alert goes up so much, red alert, then they stop. I don't want to do this. So somehow, see, organized religion, people see it immediately as sectarian. And once they see it as sectarian, then they can't take it. So in the postmodern times, we live in what is called postmodern times, so people want to see authenticity. So it is, broadly speaking, in pre-modern times, people consider religion as scripture as authority. In modern times, people consider science as authority. But in postmodern times, even there have been philosophers of science who have pointed out how science is. There are scientists who are material, who are selfish. They do manipulate results. Many of the counterproductive effects of technology have come out. So people in the postmodern times have faith neither in scripture, which they had in pre-modern times, nor in science, which they had in modern times. The only thing that they have faith in is in experience. If something works for you, I want to see that. So basically, three ways, you know, sir. If I say, this is the truth, say, people will say, oh, how do you know? Different people have different ideas of the truth. So you should do it, get lost. But this is what I do, and this is how it works for me. Yeah, I want to know about it. So if you present it as, yeah, we want to be based on the Vedic scriptures, but people don't have faith in not just the Vedic scriptures, but in scripture in general. They feel that, okay, there's so much historical analysis of religious texts done, and people feel this is not relevant. They have a lot of questions about that. But if something works for you, then I want, because what is happening in Kali Yuga, in this postmodern times, nothing works for people. So, you know, everything is collapsing. So if something works, I want to know how it works. And then you leave it to me whether I'll practice it or not. So an example is given of the how to communicate to a postmodern ether, postmodern mind. So say if a middle-aged couple says to a group of young couples, you know, we have been married for the last 25 years happily. So if they follow it up with saying, all of you, when you get married, you should never divorce. Or if you say, divorce is a sin against God, say, get lost. You say, this is the truth, or this is what you should do. But the same thing they present, that we have been married for the last 25 years, and we would like to share how we made it work. Oh yeah, please tell us, we want to know. So the idea is that if we can present Krishna consciousness as something that works for us, and how it works. This is what I mean by spiritual individuals. People see that, okay, this is a spiritual individual, and this is how they are being spiritual. I want to know about it. So if you could present it that way, then we have a lot of spiritual potency. And people's lives do get transformed when they practice bhakti. But we need to avoid that perception of organized religion and avoid the perception of dogmatism. We can still be telling what scripture says, but we need to present it in as less dogmatic way as possible. So if we can do that, that's my small understanding of basically the postmodern mind and how to communicate with that mind. So there can be three broad visions of spirituality. One is spirituality as requiring the rejection of material life. Second is spirituality as a complementation of material life. This material life is good, but you need the spiritual also, otherwise you won't be satisfied. And the third is spirituality as a tool to improve material life. Your stress will decrease, your bad habits will go away, you will become a better performer. So most of the spiritual organizations that are popular, they present spirituality in third category. Mindfulness meditation is big because it improves health. Yoga is big because it improves health. Now of course we could say the question is how much spiritual it is. That's a valid question. But the point is how spirituality is presented. So ISKCON has traditionally presented spirituality in the first category. Spirituality is requiring the rejection of material life. Whereas most popular spiritual organizations present it as spirituality as improving your material life. Now obviously that is not our goal. But that may be what is initially required. Prabhupada also did that sometimes. When he came to India, after being in America, he met a group of businessmen in India and he said, I went to America with 40 rupees, now I got temples worth 40 crore rupees. So doing business for Krishna is very profitable business. So we may sometimes have to, that world rejecting conception of spirituality gets rejected by the world too. So we could be in the, start with the first, but you know this will, and it does improve one's material life also, not necessarily in terms of a person will earn more money, but if we become more spiritual, we become more tolerant, we become more considerate, our relationships improve, our bad habits go away. So we could present that and then present spirituality as a complement to material life, not as a replacement for material life. Because for rejecting material, see what happens is, people want to know what are the solutions you offer to problems here and now. Whenever there are problems in the world, we say the solution is, this world is dukkhalayam, get out of this world. But you know, getting out of this world takes a whole lifetime. How do I live during this lifetime? So if we could present spirituality as a complement, not just as a rejection, then we have much more scope of reaching out to a large number of people who are actually interested spiritually. But because of the perception of organized religion and dogmatism, they are put off. That's my small understanding. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you can speak, I'll repeat. We'll just finish with this. Yeah. I don't want to delay everyone. Yeah. Yeah, I think we should stop. We'll talk one-to-one, Prabhu, if you don't mind.
Yeah, maybe we should start.
Yeah. We'll talk one-to-one. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki, Granthra, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Gaur Premanandi.